Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and of course, I've got my fantastic co-host online, Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good morning. It's great to be here again to speak about new media and all the cool stuff that's going on. And we have a great guest that's been around the podcasting space for a long time, and he kind of spends his days thinking about Windows Phone, which is always great to have a guest on that that thinks about Windows Phone.
And considering that most people are like, okay, this should be interesting because, you know, I don't see a lot of people walking with Windows Phone, to be honest with you.
I saw go to Italy.
Really, that's kind of interesting. I saw a lot last week, believe it or not, but we'll talk more about that in a minute. But Daniel, good morning and welcome to the New Media Show. And for those of you that are just checking in, we got Daniel Rubino with us, and again from WPCentral.com.
Morning, everybody. Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here. It's a great day here in Massachusetts. I'm outside today, obviously. So,
oh wow!
Hopefully,
okay.
No wild animals will come into the picture. But yeah, it's great to be with you guys. I'm excited about talking about this stuff.
And you know, I'll have to say your video is perfect. I mean,
okay, good.
And that we don't know. You know, it's a you can tell it's a crisp morning there. And you got to enjoy those nice days while you can, because you never know when the weather's going to just turn el crapo.
Exactly. Yeah, especially absolutely. Up here in New England, definitely.
But hey, just want to let you go. Hey, Rob and Daniel, last week I was in Tucson, spent some time. Man, the lineup of people that were there were pretty incredible from a guest standpoint. I had a lunch, Rob, with Steve Ballmer's right-hand man. That was pretty incredible. And a variety of other just really high influential folks in the space. And Techonomy was kind of this interesting conference. They did pretty much all panels, and it was really high-level discussions on topics everywhere from where the biospace is going to, what's going to be the next big thing. And it was just written. I have pages and pages of notes. I'm going to share a lot of details and nuggets from that event on my next show. But, you know, one evening we had one of the, this guy was, and I apologize, I forget what his first and last name is, but he was the gentleman that actually came up with the term personal computer. He was there. And then this panel was talking about all the stuff that's going on in DNA engineering. It's just, some of it kind of made me go, whoa, the GMO folks that are real big GMO advocates, not advocates, GMO that don't like GMO foods, they're absolutely going to go crazy. I mean, when they hear what some of the stuff, I always laugh that, you know, we've been eating GMO foods for many, many years. And you know, people have been just recently started really get on the bandwagon. But what these folks have planned and what's being done in China and other places will make your eyeballs just pop out of your head. It's just, it's like, whoa. And it's sometimes it may be happening in your neighbor's garage. So I'll be talking about that on Monday night. But today we're here to talk about new media. But Techonomy 13, check it out. Just look at the lineup of guests, and then I'll give everyone a big rundown on Monday. But anyway, cool. So, Rob, you want to kick this thing off?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to bring on Daniel to bring a little bit of a, you know, to get his podcast network. You know, he has a network that he's been involved in. I don't know if you started it, Daniel, or if it was just a group of podcasters that got together to form Mobile Nations. But if you could talk about kind of your network and and what you're doing on your website, and then also as part of your podcast and kind of your journey that's kind of happened here over the years.
Sure. So Mobile Nations goes back actually a very long time. Before then, we were known as Smartphone Experts. And it was started, I believe it was 1999, 2000, back in the Visor days. It was called Visor Central, the original site. For you guys who don't know what Visor is, it was before Palm. It was what the Trio eventually morphed into. So we go way back. And so we've been doing the blogging thing for a long time. And as the years passed, we acquired and developed other sites, including iMore, Android Central, what was WM Experts became WP Central. It was Windows Mobile back then. And then we also had Pre-Nation, WebOS. Well, WebOS Nation became Pre-Central later on. And, of course, CrackBerry was one of the largest sites. And so we've always had these sites out there, but they sort of operated independently with independent teams. In the last few years, we've been bringing them closer together and trying to make a more coherent message. Because mobile itself, sure, there's teams and different sides and, competitive software out there. But in the end, it's still the theme is the same. And we've been doing podcasts for us started, I think, in 2007, 2008. I forgot how long ago. It was quite a long time, and I've been doing it for a while. The podcasts are very interesting because it's a great way to interact with your audience, but they're also sort of time-consuming. You got to plan and set up things and video quality, audio, how you record it, YouTube, Google Hangout. All of this stuff now is becoming more mainstream and easier to do. But people are, of course, demanding more and more from it. So, we've been in Windows Phone Central relaunched, I think it was in 2009, 2010, right? It was 2010, right, when Windows Phone came out and we rebranded from Windows Mobile. And since then, we've been growing, and now we're the number one Windows Phone site in the world by far, actually. And we're doing very well. And although Windows Phone is still growing slowly, it's actually a point now in its growth where we're seeing a lot more in our audience. So,
yeah, so you can probably trace a direct proportion to the popularity and market share of a particular platform like the Windows Phone platform with the traffic and activity on your website?
Yeah, because we're the top site, and we have been for a couple of years now for Windows Phone, our traffic does actually mirror the adoption. I mean, we only say right now the limits of our website as far as gaining more traffic is the limits of the Windows Phone gaining more market share, because we're basically on a one-to-one with them. We're actually slightly ahead because a lot of people who don't have a Windows Phone but are considering it do read our site. And so it's that idea that, hey, maybe in a couple of months I may want that phone. Let me start researching, getting familiar with the ecosystem and what's, the big thing that's going on right now. What's a big new device I should be looking for? So we get a little overlap and more audience there. But yeah, we had a 200% increase in traffic in 11 months. So we're doing quite well with, growing the site and interacting with our audience. And we play, the whole Mobile Nation's websites play an interesting role. We're not trying to be a strict news site, like say like The Verge or Engadget. That's what they do. We serve as sort of mediators between the OEMs, the manufacturers, software developers, and just people who are buying the phones. And we like to link all those groups together and get them to talk to each other and sort of serve as the middle guy who communicates between them. So we'll talk to like Samsung or Nokia, and we'll parlay to that to our audience, and we'll get our audience to talk to the manufacturers and developers. We get involved, and that's our role. We really enjoy doing that because it's working with the community and trying to get people and developers, especially independent developers, on board and try to get them to interact with each other.
So if you go back to 2007, was the reason that you really started doing this was to create a podcast, or was it to create a blog, or was it always a parallel track for you?
It was a parallel track, I would say. The podcast became, it was sort of like that you must do it kind of thing. You have to have that to get out in that space, because it's just, mm-hmm. people don't have time to read your site. And especially, yeah. or if they do, they may check out once or twice a week, but a lot of people don't go and refresh every morning looking for that latest news story. There are those people, and we do tend to cater to those people, of course, too. But that wider audience doesn't do that, and you have to acknowledge that and the fact that not everybody's going to understand all the minutiae you're talking about. So being able to recap that into a podcast is a really great format. Plus, a lot of people listen to it when they're commuting to work or in their spare time. It's a lot easier to just put on, listen, and hear that as opposed to going to a site and reading article by article. So it's a very streamlined format. We've always planned on doing them. We want to do more with them. Rene Ritchie at iMore does quite a few of them himself. But I find them time consuming almost, mostly because I have to set up for them. I need basically a better permanent setup where I am. And eventually when I move, I'll probably end up doing that. But, with the I find Google's technology is just infuriating to use, because every time I go to use a Google system, I feel like I have to have like a little recipe of notes for how to do it. But it's been really interesting to see how podcasts have evolved. Like, audio was standard back then, of course, that's what a podcast was. But now HD video to accompany it is pretty much expected of you. And so you have to be able to deliver that. And using your simple webcam on your laptop is not acceptable. So it's been kind of interesting to see the quality increase and the audience demand that increase, because they want to be able to see and interact on different mediums.
One thing that I find interesting on the mobile space, and, you know, from time to time I get a mobile phone to review, and, you know, you use it for 2-3 days, and, you know, unless it's something really spectacular, what do you have more to talk about? The screen, the size, you know, the some of maybe their built-in apps. For me, it gets real difficult to talk about multiple phones, and I can't even imagine being the guy that's doing the iPhone beat. Because if you're doing the iPhone beat, you know, Apple does a pretty good job of marketing their phone and showing the changes. And so, you know, how deep in the minutia can you get on an iPhone site? Is it more than going into the apps and different things that are available? Because you can only talk about the phone so much on the iPhone side. So Do you guys spend a lot of time then talking about new apps and stuff that's cool in that space as well?
Yeah, and that's always the challenge. So, I mean, two diametric differently sites would be iMore, which does the iPhone, and Android Central, which does Android. Completely different. Android Central, like, we joke around that Phil Nickenson, the editor-in-chief of that site, has to do 5 reviews every morning for new devices, because there's just so much going on in that space. And he's always got new hardware coming out and this and that. So that's his focus, where Renee, he basically gets one phone a year to cover. And when he does it, he's just got to go out big and just, you know, really. And Windows Phone is, like, literally in between that. Like, we're not on that same release pattern as Android is, but we're definitely way more than the iPhone. So we do phone releases every... It's probably almost every 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks now, something new is coming out. So we're in between. But yeah, so how you fill that time is a crucial point. So on iMore, they focus a lot on how-to articles, how to fix things, how to get this to work, how to do this. And that's actually good, because people who buy Apple products tend to be that less, you know, I know some people are going to be unhappy about this, but they tend to be less tech savvy, or rather, and I don't mean that as an insult, they're people who don't want to be bothered by the minutiae of trying to figure out how something works. They just want it to work.
Right.
And that's always been the appeal of Apple. And so, you know, doing those kind of articles is good for them. Android, though, is almost a little bit different. You can go into, like, custom ROMs and hacking this, and there's just a lot more to cover, especially since Android now is being put onto everything, from watches to mini computers to, of course, phones and laptops. And Windows Phone is interesting because we have the phone stuff, but we have this huge ecosystem that is slowly merging together, right? You have Xbox, you have Windows 8, and all those now are coming onto the same platform. They overlap tremendously. You got the video, Xbox Video, Xbox Music, you know, all this stuff is coming together. So we try to cover, you know, sort of that stuff, which our audience, if you have a Windows Phone, you're going to be very likely to have a Windows 8 tablet, computer, and an Xbox. So we'd have to cover that as well. So each site is slightly tailored differently. And yeah, you have to figure out what your audience wants.
Yeah, I'm kind of the guy that has everything. I got a Windows 8, you know, and then I've got an iPad, and I have a Nexus 7, and I have an Android phone. So, you know,
But he doesn't have a Windows phone, though. We got to get him a Windows phone.
No, yeah, no one's ever offered me one up to review. So,
well, you got the 1520 coming out next week, and we just did a story about, if you go to your AT&T store, you may be able to buy one today, because some stores are being That's stupid awesome. And selling them early. But the 1520 is an impressive device. It's actually borderline ridiculous. It's a 6-inch Windows phone.
That's the phone I want. I want a 6-inch phone. I've been wanting this for a long time. I went out and bought the 1020, thinking, you know, that was the best phone to get. And then I found out right after I bought that phone that the 1520 was coming, and I was like, darn, you know, I wanted to get
that's what we're getting into today. There is no best phone anymore.
Yeah,
you know, there's a phone that you want now for the thing you want to do. The 1020 is a fantastic all-around device, but it's primarily geared for photography. So, you know, it's not, you know, I grab that phone when I go to a concert or I'm going out for a night and I want to take photos. But the 1520 is a great workhorse. It's really good for doing work on, whether you're manipulating Word, writing something, because that screen is so massive. And this is the great thing about the smartphone story, is that we're going from... you know, one major device every 2 years, and that's what you would get. Now people are carrying multiple devices and switching them on a regular basis, and now people are getting two devices and three devices because the price has also dropped. So it's a fascinating area for technology, and then you're getting the overlap, of course, of tablets, which is also really fascinating.
You know, the challenge is my wife doesn't understand it. She's like, why do you have, I go out the door with a backpack. She goes, why do you have an iPad? Why do you have a Nexus? Why do you have your Android phone? Why do you have an iPhone? Do you need all that? And plus a MiFi, you know, and I'm like,
right.
Like,
you gotta have them connected. Yeah.
So, you know, she doesn't get it, but I think the majority of us that are doing different things understand why.
But, well, that's the real beauty of the story today with modern technologies, especially like, you know, Apple, Google, and Microsoft. You know, I know a lot of people get into the which one's better and, oh, this rocks and this sucks and all this. But the reality of it is that all these devices are actually really good and impressive. Mm-hmm. And you got to sort of go through the minutia of like why something's better than the other. And it's really personal preference. But there's no doubt, you know, the new iPads are amazing. The Nexus 7 is a fantastic device. The new Surface 2, I love. Like, something about the Surface 2 where you would have to like kill me to get it out of my hands. I just love it so much. But that's what's really neat. We're living this time where all the platforms now, even Android, like a lot of people complain it was laggy and this and that, but they keep improving. And 4.4 is actually like a really nice update. I mean, ever since 4, it actually got really good. And of course, iOS 7 is, you know, stable as a rock. Although iOS 7 has a little quirks here and there, but all these platforms are all fantastic. So I don't really like to get into the, you know,
right,
which side's better, but carrying all the devices is the best way to sort of see, you know, how everybody does it, approaches and solves the problem differently for mobile technology.
And, you know, I think it goes back to, you know, the days when, you know, everyone's calling Mac users fanboys. And I think we're beyond that at this point. I think people are, you know, although you go certain places and you see a certain, you go to middle America and you see Windows machines. But if you're definitely on the East Coast or you're on the West Coast, it's predominantly Mac. So it's kind of this weird, you know, this weird makeup. But I think if you go into, you know, most people's homes in America, you're going to find a Windows machine just because they cost a lot less. But yeah, we can get into that whole discussion. So I guess switching back to the podcast stuff, my kind of thought was, you know, from a mobile side, you know, everything's got to be pretty visual. You know, you can talk on the audio side. So what are some of the tricks and tips that you're using to, and I'm assuming you're doing video, and if you're not, I apologize, but if you're doing the video part, how are you guys actually, you know, are you guys screen capturing, or do you have a special camera that you're focusing? How are you guys actually demoing the mobile devices?
Yeah, I made it a strict rule a couple of years ago that we don't do it 100% because sometimes you can't, but for every lead photo for an article, we use a real photo. And it's a little bit challenging, but once you get hooked on it, I have a D700 I shoot, and some of our other guys, luckily a lot of our writers are sort of photography buffs, and so they know how to work a camera. So almost at any time we're going to talk about an app, there's two things we do. When we talk about an app that just came out, everybody runs it and kind of test it. So we don't ever write blindly on something, or we try not to if we can. And that's because we're not a site that just goes, oh, this is out and that's it. And, you know, so showing the photo of it on your phone actually sort of demonstrates the fact that you actually tried this and what you're writing is from your own experience.
Yeah.
And so we always do that. You know, it's about good lighting. So we try to get good photos. You know, the bokeh blurred background is always good. We do try to do video as much as we can, because video is huge. A lot of people don't want to bother reading the article. They'd rather just watch it. And I understand that. You know, it's a lot easier to put on a video and see it in action. It's also more enticing, too. Someone just talks about an app and goes, this is an amazing app, and there's still shots on there. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay. But if you show it in a video and they actually see, like, wow, that really does look nice, it's a whole different way of selling things. Of course, the problem with video is it's time-consuming. And I do primarily most of the videos on our site, mostly because I'm quick at it. I don't like my videos necessarily, though, because it's about doing the multi-cuts and, you know, the graphics and everything. But it takes time, and you actually need a dedicated video person to sort of do that for you. Otherwise, you're going to spend 2-3 hours doing this, you know, this and ignoring all the other stuff. So we just hired recently Mark Goom from the Nokia blog. And he was primarily a video blogger. Like, he would do a short post, but his video was always the centered, featured part. And he does great videos. So this is my philosophy in life, which is when you can't do something well, hire that guy that does. And so we did that. And so now Mark is doing a lot of our videos. And so, you know, that's what we try to do. But it's about filling in all those gaps. So, yeah, you want video, you want real photos of things, you want the screen caps, audio samples when you can. It's about making use of all the media and then being able to give that to your audience on all platforms. It's not just about the web, right? So we have an app, we built an app for Windows Phone so people can view that stuff on their Windows Phone directly. So it's about trying to do all that. But we set the bar for quality. We try to, at least. And that's why we do these high-quality photos. We never try to do low resolution and grainy stuff. So it's kind of a requirement on our site to be able to use, be proficient using a camera.
And, you know, so getting a picture off a phone can be challenging at times because of the glass and the reflection and everything else.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
And I think you probably learned some pretty good tricks on how to shoot those. I just, do you use a box or do you use a, do you guys just have a?
Yeah, a box is really good. The only problem with the box is it can be a little cold and antiseptic because it's just like a white background. Right. And, you know, but they're good limited. I actually don't use one. I should, but I don't. I actually like doing, if you go to like WP Central and you look, a lot of my photos will be outdoors, like just in my backyard with grass background. I like the juxtaposition of the natural world with modern technology. It gives a more organic feel to it as opposed to it being in this abstract matrix universe where everything is clean and pure.
Yep.
So I always try to do it like, or in a coffee shop or something like we, you can actually imagine yourself using that phone in that real life situation.
Smart.
So that's how I do it. But everybody has their own, you know, preference for things.
Yeah. I'm looking at your site right now and I know you got a little bit of glare there, but we're showing to the audience as well. I see an article where you've got, looks like one on a counter, then a couple, you can see the leaves in the background and yeah. So nice. I like the, how you're doing that and actually, holding it. So when it comes to the, so do you just only do stills? Because I, what I'm trying to get is on your process is, you know, when I'm trying to demo an app, what I really want to do is I want to put it on the screen and I want to be able to walk through and show everybody exactly, you know, what this thing's doing. If it's a game or whatever, you know, that can be a more of a challenge, especially if there's no video out and there's no way to, you know, replicate that into a system. So do you just then rely on the still shots?
Yeah, it kind of depends. It's a case-by-case basis. So if an app is just being updated, for instance, Amazon.com bumped their app up to a new version, even if they just added something new, we won't do a video for that, mostly just because of time constraints. If we could, we would, but we simply, I mean, we'll, on a good day for us, we'll do 30 articles.
Gotcha.
And so that's just, it would be too much. Yeah. So that'd be too much to do video. But say like when Vine came out. So Vine was announced last week for Windows Phone and finally came. So we did the post about it, you know, going live. And we want to get that out as soon as possible. Just give the audience the link. We do the photo, you know, showing that it's actually live and there it is on our phone. We'll do the screenshots from the app, quickly describe it, and we just get that out there because that's what people want now. And then we followed it up with later in the afternoon with a full video demo walkthrough of the app showing how it works and everything because that's also long tail stuff. That's the thing that... Yep. If you don't have a Windows Phone, you're like, you know, I wonder how Vine looks on there. You go to YouTube, Vine, Windows Phone, that video will come up. So it's not just for the guy to just download it, but for a person who doesn't have a Windows Phone. And so they'll get to see it in action. And that video will actually last us a long time because unless Vine's going to completely overhaul the UI or radically change something, we don't necessarily need to do a new video. But sometimes a version 2.0 of something will come out and it'll be radically different. In that case, we'll do the video and show how it's different. You know, so for software, it's tough. You got to balance your time constraints with how important the story is. If it's a real niche third-party app, video is probably not necessary. If it's a major app for like a major service, like a Twitter or something from Amazon, Vine, when Instagram comes out, you know, we'll do that full video for that. So those things you do. For devices, when it's a new device, always do a video, of course. People really want to see what it looks like just in, you know, real life being turned around and because that's a lot different from a still picture. So
one thing that and Rob, I'm hogging the mic here, so just interrupt me when you want to. You know, one thing having a tech site is that I get more offers to review stuff than I can really handle. And some stuff I have a closet where stuff's that and I tell the people it's in the closet. It's going to be in the pile. I'm going to go through it. And I'm the same way. We use every product. We don't do press release write-ups. We actually touch it, feel it, and give the real story. And so from, you know, having blog for years, it's automatically I'm kind of on a list. And now I'm starting to get on the professional audio video list where I'm actually doing mic reviews and that kind of stuff. And you know, when you get into the higher end stuff, it's for me, it's the biggest pain is getting the shipping to send stuff back. Sometimes they don't care, you know, but on your guys' side, you know, and the thing that I've always been found interesting on the phone side, I've never got too many offers for phone reviews. If I've done, it's been through like a third party that's doing a big campaign for a company where there may be, they're going to send 50 out or 100 or whatever it is. But for a person that's doing a podcast that is doing reviews, sometimes they don't naturally get on a list. You know, you guys are probably on every press person's and you just get a box, you know, and that's what happens here. Stuff just shows up. What would you tell someone that was just getting started doing, not necessarily, and maybe let's say it's phone reviews or mobile reviews, you know, how does that person get on a list so that they don't have to go buy every phone? They actually get them sent to them as a loaner.
Yeah. That's a great question. I'm really good at answering that one because when I started back in 2007, I was a part-time writer. I mean, my origins actually go back to just working forums. That was where I was. I was just answering people's questions, working with them there, and that was just a hobby of mine. Then I moved up to being a part-time writer, then a full-time, and then eventually editor-in-chief. So I got to see the whole process of, like, how do you get these phones, you know? And I was never part of that. And now, yeah, now we're kind of a part of it. And it varies from company to company, too. I can tell you, like, for the Windows Phone side, like, Nokia is fantastic. They were one of the best companies I've ever worked with on anything. They just really get new media. They get all that stuff. They're really easy to contact and touch with. They have great media teams. And as far as getting devices out, they even have any consumer can go to their website and sort of request a loaner device to try out. And it's a thing on their conversations blog you can do. So they're really good about seeding out devices to, you know, people with even modest amounts of influence. So they're really good like that. ACC is in between. They're actually pretty good. They're not as, I would say, media savvy as Nokia is, but they're getting there and they do some things. Samsung is, I found, real interesting. Samsung really doesn't bother with many sites unless you're the top, even with Windows Phone. Like, we're the top Windows Phone site out there. But Samsung, it's really hard to get a device from them. They almost aren't interested, primarily because I think they're focused on Android right now, which is their prerogative. But being able to figure that stuff out and get in contact with these companies, you know, a lot of it comes down to influence. I hate using clout as, you know, a lot of people have mixed feelings on clout. And for those who don't know, clout is a way to measure your social influence, and it takes into things like Facebook, Google+, Twitter, Instagram, basically every social network, and then it rates you and shows you how influential you are. But the fact is, a lot of companies actually do use that now. And so if you're not aware of your clout score, it's sort of like your credit rating in the, you know, new media age. You should be familiar with it and try to figure out ways to increase it, because the higher clout score goes, a lot of companies look at that and be like, oh, this person is influential. Because that's a hard thing to measure, how influential you are. And that's what really determines about whether you get, like, loaner devices and review devices from companies in those or invited to conferences, press events, that kind of thing.
Samsung's not Samsung's weird also in the regular space, too. They don't and I always laugh. Last year, was even more funny because I take a team to the Consumer Electronics Show, is that last year, Samsung did independent live broadcasting from their booth with their team.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know how independent it was. That thing was scripted from here to tomorrow, and you go to their booth and you are manhandled. You know, you go in as a, you have a press or a blogger or any type, and they... It's, you know, you can, it's better to walk in there with a non-press badge, because then they don't bother you. You can just go take pictures. But if you walk in there with a camera and you have any type of a credentialed pass, they are, to me, they're almost on my don't bother list. You know, it is. And I think they really despise the new media folks personally.
That's my feeling too. You know what's weird about Samsung? It's like, I'm actually on a Samsung laptop. I use the TVS on occasion. Actually, and I have a Samsung TV. They make good hardware, but they do seem to not care for new media too much. No. And when I talk to other people in the industry, they all say the same thing. No one actually, they have a nasty reputation amongst other companies and amongst individuals.
Yeah,
but
I don't get it.
But they, yeah, but they're dominant in the consumer space. You know, they're just relentless in what they're doing. And their focus on mobile is pretty crazy with the amount of money and resources that they're sinking into it. So they're a mixed bag. I like Nokia's perspective better. I find them a lot more easy to work with and a lot more fun to work with. And that's kind of what it should be about. Nokia has fun with what they do. You get the impression when you talk to new employees that they love their jobs and they love what they're doing. Samsung is very much more corporate oriented. So as a blogger trying to get into that or someone doing a podcast, it can be difficult. Start following the right people on Twitter, you know, and it can be hard to navigate this space. There is no, you know, handbook written on how to be influential and how to get in touch with the right people. It's taken me years, and, you know, I'm starting to get there now, but it's definitely a process.
You know, I find funny, and I'll tell you a little just kind of an anecdote story here. I was 2 years ago, we walked into the booth, and immediately the handlers came, or so we have to get you someone to, you know, to walk you through. And I'm like, I'm on a schedule. I've got 20 minutes. I want to do three things. I said, if your handler's coming, fine. If not, we'll go and shoot it ourselves. She goes, you can't shoot in here by yourself. And I'm like, really? So I said, I walked off their carpet, put the camera down. I said, okay, let's go. And so the lady's like, I'm standing outside the Samsung booth. They will not let me come in to shoot. We're going to talk about, and boy, oh boy. Oh boy, because I basically
PR nightmare.
Yeah. So I did it right that, and we walked, and we didn't come back. And the following year, their attitude had changed, but not. And I don't know if I caused them to change,
right. But
they really pissed me off. In a they just don't understand our time's valuable too. But anyway, long story. Just we'll continue moving on. Rob, go ahead here. I've been hogging the mic.
Well, I was just gonna make a couple of comments about cloud. I think cloud, it's kind of two parts. It's your cloud score, and I think it's also the topics that you're considered to be an expert in. It's also really important in their kind of decisions of, you know, how much of an influence you are also. So there's kind of two parts to that too. And then from a big company PR perspective, I know I was part of the blogger review program for Nokia even back in like 2005. And I know that they've been really, really aggressive and trying to reach the key influencers in the US market. It's always been an ambition for Nokia. I mean, even going back in the early days of trying to be a big brand in the US market. And they had tried for many, many years to get into this market. I know I got, you know, probably 6 or 8 phones over like a 2 or 3 year period of time from Nokia. I mean, some of those phones were just totally blew me away. That, you know, they're like transformer phones, and you could turn them into camcorders, and it was just unbelievable the kind of hardware that was coming out of Nokia back in like the 2005, 2006 timeframe. But then you had this whole kind of next wave of phones once Microsoft got involved, and I think that they're quickly coming into a you know, and then the whole deal with Microsoft, that brand, that Lumia brand, is coming into, I think, is going to be becoming a major significant smartphone brand globally, and I think it's, you know, and what you're seeing with the activity with the WP Central side, I think, is just beginning. I think that the Lumia line is going to be a real serious rival to the incumbents right now, and I think that it's just a matter of time before that actually happens.
Yeah, the big complaint people have right now is sort of the app gap, you know, but that is really diminishing day by day. You should be noticing now that there's a steady stream of major apps, like Flipboard just came out on Windows 8. It's coming to Windows Phone real soon. Instagram is very close to coming out. Vine just came out. So we're seeing more and more of these apps, major apps, coming to the platform. And Microsoft's building it up, and there's a purposeful strategy to this. You're going to see it culminate coming up this week. And the idea behind that, of course, is the holiday season. You got everything. The 1520 is coming out next Friday. The Xbox One comes out next Friday. The Lumia 2520 tablet comes out next Friday. And then you're going to have a bunch of games and apps coming out for all that stuff. And so they have this really impressive strategy. And it's the app gap thing is really the only argument people have left. The thing with Windows Phone is, it's really interesting, is that it's a good operating system in the sense that it's not slow, it doesn't crash, it's completely stable. And so most people who use it enjoy it. There's an aesthetic preference there. Some people just don't like the look of it, and you can't ever really change that. But almost everybody agrees it's good. And then you combine it with Nokia's hardware, which is phenomenal. They just make some of the best hardware around. Had they gone Android, I think Windows Phone would be a completely different story today. It would be... I think probably by now we would have had a Microsoft-branded phone, their own, and they would have gone that route because HTC and Samsung just don't have the chops to do it. But with Nokia's hardware and their innovation, those two things, it makes a really compelling device. So they're good phones. It's just a matter of combating the Android influence, which is huge, and, of course, Apple. But Apple's actually losing space. Windows Phone now is bigger than iOS in 10 countries, including Italy and I think the UK and Russia and a couple others. These are pretty significant markets where iOS is actually getting, eclipsed now by Windows Phone. Android will be forever. This isn't about getting number one either. I don't think you ever catch up to Android. But, Microsoft has the right strategy here and they have a good product. It's just a matter of trying to... get it into people's hands. You buy a smartphone, you don't get another one 3 months later. It's right. Not that kind of changeover. So you have to sort of wait till people shift in the market and then nab them at that point. So it's a challenge, but yeah. Microsoft's got billions of dollars. They're not going to just walk away from this. It's the same thing with the Xbox, I remember when the Xbox was announced, and who doesn't, right? It was Nintendo and Sony. And everybody laughed. How the hell is Microsoft going to make a dent in this market? Like, those are not only two big companies. They're two good companies. They were making pretty good stuff back then. Nintendo was always making huge, and same thing with Sony. And then walked Microsoft in years of losses, and then they finally won. So it's a battle of attrition.
I personally think, though, that Windows 8 is hurting Windows Phone.
Well, their whole strategy is both awesome and damaging, because it's a tough thing. Windows 8 may almost be too revolutionary for the average consumer who sees it and it's like, oh my God, I don't know what that is. But they had to sort of go down that route because tablets and the touch screen phenomena is the next thing. And it already is, sort of the iPad. But Windows itself wasn't built to be touch. So how do you go from A to B? And they had to do that with Windows 8. But with 8.1, and then you can see Windows Phone 8.1 in the spring, those two things merging, and when you put them together in a picture, you're going to go, that looks like that, and you're going to get that more similar experience. I really believe RT is going to be merged into the Windows Phone operating system, and you're just going to basically have two. You're going to have your big PC computers and your laptops, and you're going to have tablets and phones, which will run the same operating system. And then the stores are merging together, and you're going to have the same apps being able to run on all of that stuff. It's going to be a very compelling message, but it's going to take time.
Yeah. So what's your strategy around video? Are you working a lot with just putting your videos out on YouTube? This topic comes up almost every week where we talk to our guests about their YouTube versus podcasting strategy. Could you share your thoughts on where you think that the market is right now for video versus podcasting? And as you look out in the future, what do you think is going to happen with that?
Yeah, I think unless you're a larger company, I think of like Twit TV, who can afford multiple platforms and different streaming options. Mm-hmm. YouTube is the easiest because it's basically free. And then you combine it with the Google Hangouts where you can do a live stream and then it gets converted to YouTube automatically for you. That's a compelling thing. Having said that, I don't like Google, not necessarily because of the company. I feel like all their services are designed by engineers, but they're never passed through a design test because I'm a pretty techie person, but every time it goes to we just had the other day, we were joking around. I logged into YouTube and then it gave me, and this is for the WP Central account, which was WM Experts because we had to transition. And it was like, you need to link up your Google Plus account in order to comment. And then it gave me three options. One was like rename it, link it to a different account, or keep the existing. And I don't know. I didn't know what I was doing. It was like you had to choose which one. So, but I'm trying to say the Google YouTube thing is probably the easiest and best way to get it out to your audience because almost everything is compatible with streaming with YouTube. Having said that, it's tricky. And you have to figure out how to use it. I think if you're on the Android platform, you have a lot. It's a lot easier because all that stuff's built into the phone. If you're on Windows Phone, our audience actually gets mad that we use Google Hangouts because they're like, why not use Skype?
Right.
And Skype is good, but Skype's also a transition thing. And the fact is, it wasn't meant to do a lot of things people want it to do. It was meant to be on computers, peer-to-peer. Now people want it to be mobile. People want it to be able to do Hangouts and all this other stuff. And it wasn't built for that. They're going to try to make it do that stuff, but it's going to take time. So if you can do the Skype stuff, you know, it's okay. But once again, you got to figure out your audience. Unfortunately, a lot of people in our audience automatically dismiss anything Google, and they just get mad.
Let's be honest. I mean, the support for Google services on Windows Phone is abysmal. I mean, it's hard to really do anything with Google on your Windows Phone.
Really, they haven't built the app infrastructure like they have for iOS.
No, not at all.
No, it's a huge story. The long and short of it is Google won't build apps for it. And because they say it's not enough market share and it's not worth their time, which is just weird because this is a massive company that could just afford two or three developers. So they won't make the apps. They publicly have said that. And then Microsoft's like, we'll do it for you. We'll make the apps. And they did. And then Google set up all these requirements that none of their other mobile apps have and that Microsoft weren't going to be able to necessarily make. And so then Microsoft released it anyway. Then Google pulled the key. It's a war basically that's going on. And it's unfortunate because the company really shouldn't care that much. It's about is your services more important or is like Android more important? You got to make that decision. But yeah, so it's true. And people that are mad that we use the Google stuff, my retort is, what else are we going to do?
Right.
Vimeo is a great video service, but its impact is still niche. It's very much for people who do more professional video stuff, but its distribution is a lot tougher. We haven't really looked at doing Vimeo. We discuss this often with Mobile Nations about what's the best strategy and best way to do things. Because Android Central is pretty influential within our group, they tend to get more of their Google stuff pushed out. But I don't have an alternative with Microsoft. If Microsoft had a Google Hangouts version, we would use it, but they simply don't. Likewise, they don't have a social network like Facebook or even Google Plus. So it's a tough thing to navigate, and it's you have to figure out how to use the right equipment and connect everything up. But it can be a challenge.
One of the things that I was pretty, I guess for a better word, straightforward with Craig Mundy for Microsoft at Techonomy 13. Mm-hmm. And, I basically told him that I thought that they were missing the boat when it came to the podcast support they had a presence, but they could do so much more. Talked about the Xbox so there's so much more that they could do on the Windows Phone side. And Rob, I know this is a battle that you're fighting. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of attention at Microsoft for podcast stuff too. So,
To add a little commentary to that, the Windows Phone team does care about podcasting.
Right.
I want to be clear about that.
Sure.
And the company is in a transition right now. I haven't given up and there's people on the Windows Phone team that are passionate and haven't given up either. So there's some movement there, and I think there's a desire to be better. So I'll just leave it at that. I can't really talk too specifically about it, but it's definitely something that's on their radar and is an important area for the platform.
You would think they would be able to come up with, as far as production side, something akin to Skype or some way to leverage the ability to create live, almost podcasts and a streaming service on Windows Phone, on the Xbox One, and on your Windows 8 PC to use that same app and infrastructure and put it on all those systems, it would be a powerful thing because, you know, it's the same story, right? What do you use if you're a podcaster and you want to do stuff live on a scene? Use the iPhone, right? There's a lot of services for that. Not only that, you can attach a lot of accessories to it. They make these like high-powered, ridiculous mics that go right to your iPhone. You don't have to put the camera stuff on there. In terms of your little phone into a mobile podcast studio, I couldn't, there's nothing we can do like that on Windows Phone. We don't have that stuff yet.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and it's something that I would think Microsoft could, you know, easily do, or, you know, I always like to say easily, and then, like, I always make that little caveat. I'm not an engineer. I have no idea what's involved with this stuff. So it's easy for me to be like, it's just easy, but who knows? Maybe it's not. But I wish they would do a little bit more on that field.
And my main complaint to him was that the, you know, getting, you know, they're very selective on who they let into the Xbox ecosphere. I said that there's so much more content out there. And I says, if it's a, you know, if it's about dollars, then just, you know, be very upfront and, you know, work with the different teams. And his response to me was, well, Xbox One will now have a, you know, you can build an app for the Xbox One. I said, but I still have to go through some sort of laborious process, approval process. And not every app. And so what if I spend the money? I said, so it was with the iOS device, I said, I've spent the money. I put an app up. I said the approval process was a couple of weeks. I didn't have to go through lawyers and the same thing for the Roku. And I just, you know, I kind of just laid it out and I said, but on the Xbox, I'm sure if I start development today, it'll be a year before we're ready to go on Xbox One because of all the hoopla you're going to make us run through. And I don't think that we'll ever see Microsoft open up Xbox One to apps like we will, like Apple has.
I don't know. They did announce an indie program, right? I don't. I haven't followed the details of this stuff. I'm not a developer, and I don't really. I use my Xbox, but I'm in that group that uses it strictly for entertainment, almost Netflix and Hulu and that kind of thing. Right. So, but they did announce a developer program and they did open the doors a little bit. I think they have become more flexible and responsive to consumers, almost to the point it's worked against them. And what I mean by that is they announced a lot of things for the Xbox One, and then people were just like, "Rah rah, don't do that," and they're like, "All right, we won't do it." and that makes them look responsive, but also makes them look like they don't initially know what people want to begin with. You know, some of these things you should, you know, almost seem obvious. Although the DRM thing, I was actually for, I think people got that wrong and Microsoft abandoned it too quickly. I thought it was actually what they were trying to do was actually good. It'll be real interesting to see, but I think they've become more flexible with this stuff. They really lowered the barrier of entry for development on Windows Phone and Windows 8. They recently merged those developer programs together. So if you're on one now, you can, for one fee, you can register for both platforms and, you know, make apps for both platforms. They've also made the their web app system where you can basically design a Windows Phone app on the web, and it's basically free. Now, that won't go to the store for everybody, but you can do that for your phone and your friends' phones and make your own personal little app. But it whets the appetite. The idea is like you can do this, make an app, and then you can take those tools and go build a real app. And it's like a stepping, you know, ladder so that you can.
Is that tool gotten better? Because that tool was pretty rough.
Yeah. Now, they've done, I think, two updates to it already, and it's gotten pretty good. It's a work of progress. Nothing will be good on the first version, and they're taking user feedback and adjusting things. But it's, like I said, it's a stepping stone. It won't be the kind of app you build that you're going to blow away people with. It's not a native, you know, like perfectly designed thing. But it's a nice stepping stone. If you just make an app for a website that you view frequently that pulls in RSS feeds, you can easily do this on your own, you know. And that's kind of an impressive thing. It helps get people excited about programming, which even I find extremely tough to get into. But, you know, if you start like that and give people those tools, they may go, hey, I want to actually take a C++ course and, you know, get more into development. But they're really lowering literally the costs, because now it's like $19 to register to develop on Windows Phone, which is nothing. And they're also lowering the requirements and the, you know, the actual programming requirements to do it. So we'll see with the Xbox One. But if you look at what they're doing on Windows 8 and Windows Phone, I think they're making it really pretty easy. And turnaround time now on a Windows Phone app is about 2 to 3 days for certification. And I've seen high priority apps like SixTank, which is the Instagram client, get approved within 24 hours for updates. And that's pretty fast, actually. Most updates, and then once they get, the developer gets it approved and they can hit the publish button, it goes live usually within an hour, which is pretty fast, actually, for development on these platforms.
Yeah, I think that if when those two platforms merge, you know, completely, I think there's going to be a parallel track of growth of new apps in the platform that's sure. going to ramp a lot faster than what we've seen up to this point, just because mm-hmm. the cost of development will basically almost get halved. So it'll be a lot easier ramp for a lot of people to get apps into the ecosystem, and I think that's a big, huge priority for the company right now, to get better apps across the platform. On the Xbox side, you know, I actually have been involved in the Xbox team and know all the people that run the App Store there, and I do know that things may be changing on that front. It's hard to say at this point, but I know that they were very focused on getting a specific set of apps into the platform early that were key to their kind of TV strategy. And I think that they've basically mostly accomplished that. So it could be that we're coming into a new phase where they'll be more open to having other apps available on there. And I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it, you know, kind of like a merging of you know, like the Windows App Store with Xbox. I don't know if that's coming or not, but it certainly would be an interesting thing to ask. But I do also know that the Xbox user kind of paradigm that they're shooting for is a completely different kind of user experience than what's in a typical, you know, like maybe Windows Phone app.
Yeah.
But doesn't, you know, I just still think the unified approach, you know, having, you know, a development team, if I can make one app and put the hooks in and the different graphics in to make it go Windows 8, Windows Phone, and Xbox One, I'm there. That makes, financially, that makes sense.
Sure. Well, it's already there. I mean, 2/3 of that is already there. If you write a Windows 8 app, you have the same libraries, and there's about 50 to 75% overlap for those libraries with Windows Phone 8. So the selling point becomes, if you're going to make a Windows 8 app, why not make a Windows Phone one? Now you've already paid to develop on both. So you already have most of it written. So now you just got to, it's actually easier, I think, to go from Windows 8 to Windows Phone 8 because you just got to streamline it and just make it for one screen orientation. It's actually kind of difficult to go from Windows Phone to Windows 8 because you got to deal with different resolutions and the screens. It's not impossible, but that's a little bit of a challenge, but that's still a heck of a lot easier than natively developing two different things. And I think it's a lot easier than developing on iOS versus OS 10, which is a completely different, I mean, there's overlap there too, but I don't think it's as seamless as what Microsoft's trying to do. And that's going to increase. You're going to see this come more with Windows 8.1 and going further, Windows Phone 8.1. And you're dealing with two things in Microsoft. You're dealing with entrenched divisions who are now, you know, all operate on different, well, they used to operate on different pages. And now I know the Windows Phone team and the Windows team are working closer together. That's not to say everything is, you know, happy and there are rainbows and everybody's holding hands there. There's still conflict about how to do things. And now there's a debate about how to, like, for instance, the search key on Windows Phone, they had it one way early on and now they made it was a context sensitive, so you can search within an app when you hit that key. But developers weren't using it, so Microsoft pulled it out, and now when you hit that search key on Windows Phone, no matter what you're in, it always goes to Bing. On Windows 8, they want to do it their own way, and so there's conflict on how to do that. So everything's not perfect, but these divisions are coming together. It's going to take time, though, to merge this stuff and get it the right way and figure out the path. And no matter how fast Microsoft moves on this project, it'll never be fast enough, both for the market and tech pundits who want it to go faster. And that's understandable. But it's a massive thing for them, what they're doing. And I think it's what they're doing today is a lot better than where they were a couple of years ago and how they operated. So I'm actually pretty happy with it. But we haven't seen the full picture yet for another, I say 2014, 2015. You'll really see this message come together. You're already seeing it now, but it'll get even more obvious.
But I, you know, again, I want to go back, and I know you guys are both, you know, You know, you both are in the ecosystem, and you're hardcore fans. But I'll be straight up. The thing that's held me back from even considering a Windows Phone is I got so pissed off with Windows 8. You know, my brain exploded. It really did. I'm literally, and I'm easy guy. I like new. I like change. I like new shiny things. I like to touch. But when even on Windows 8.1 with the upgrade, you know, it just I think they went too far too fast. And took some stuff, you know, and it just, and I know that they're trying to do, they're trying to force it down our throats, but Windows 7, where do I have Windows 8? Oh, it's back in a bag in a laptop back there. So, you know, if they can't get the Windows, if they can't get the Windows 7 guys to upgrade to Windows 8, you know, they're not going to get a Windows guy to buy a Windows Phone until they fix that. And I don't know what the solution is, but I truly believe that.
So there's two things here. I think one when you pick up a new Windows 8 computer, like Windows 8 doesn't really make sense until you get a touchscreen.
Right.
And a Surface 2 is like a great device for this to kind of get you into it. And once you start using touch, it makes a lot more sense and it becomes obvious. So that's one issue, is getting the hardware. When people buy new hardware, they're going to get Windows 8 no matter what.
Sadly.
As far as forcing it down their throats, that's just standard. That's a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Everybody faces this. BlackBerry faced this with going to BB10. It's different in a lot of ways. Some ways it's good. Some ways it's not. Believe it or not, Apple will face this problem. They're going to face the problem with OS X, which is aging and hasn't changed radically. They have an issue with iOS, which is you still have OS X and iOS. What's the deal? Are those coming together? Probably.
Right.
How are you going to do that, though? And things will change there, too. iOS, so I just got my first iPhone only a couple months ago. I got the 5S. It's the first time I ever used it. I had an iPad years ago, but I was like that new test guy. Like, all right, let me see how easy this is. iOS is not easy to use, okay? People who say that have been using the iPhone for years, and they know it. iOS used to be easy, but like all computer systems, in order to improve things, you add complexity to the system. And iOS, I'm not saying it's like Android hard, but it is. There's a learning curve there, and not everything is perfect. And because every time they need to improve things, you're adding things to it, and it's increasing
feature complexity. Creep. Yeah, that's what they call it.
Yeah. But yeah, and at some point though, that UI is getting old. I mean, first of all, that UI was, you know, you go back to Trio Garnet, and like that's the same sort of layout, right, with the icons. But they're going to have to radically revamp that system. And when they do, they're either going to get it right, they're going to get it wrong, or it's going to be somewhere in between, and then they're going to have to adjust accordingly to the market. But they can't stick. You're not going to see what's iOS 7 today. You're not going to see that 5 years from now as being the same thing. It's going to radically evolve as UI evolves, technology evolves, design evolves. You've already seen it. iOS 7 borrows a lot from Windows Phone. As far as flattening everything out, and you know, Android's going to have to deal with it. So every platform at some point needs to reboot itself. Windows Mobile did this. You know, the story of Windows Mobile is fascinating because what was called Photon was going to be an advanced version of what was Windows Mobile. And that was, they were going to either do that or they're going to go with this Windows Phone thing. And it was two divergent patterns. The Windows Phone design was radically different from everything they've done before, and they lost a lot of functionality. But they chose that over the Windows Photon program, which looked a lot like Windows Mobile and the old system. And so you have to, everybody has to reboot at some point, and it's a painful process. And there's gonna be all this criticism. They went too fast, they changed this too much, they should have done this. But that's just the nature of the system. You're seeing Microsoft go through it right now, but I guarantee you, it doesn't matter. In a couple of years, this stuff is gonna be, people are gonna see it so often on TV, they would see in the computer stores, it's just going to start to click with them and they will change over. And that's just the story of it.
Yeah, I think that the whole conversation around Windows 8 really, really centers around the desktop.
Yeah.
And right. What's going to happen to the desktop, and what users, you know, the hundreds of millions of users that have Windows 7 are basically desktop users, right?
Yep.
So you have this new touch design versus desktop users, and that's the issue that Microsoft has to figure out is how to navigate that sure. kind of UI distinction as they move into new types of devices. Because I believe that the whole thing of having one operating system that basically is two in one is confusing, and that's what's driven a lot of people to be frustrated.
Definitely. I mean, and the thing with the two-in-one, I mean, the problem is this. Microsoft actually wanted to kill the desktop completely, but that would even get more people riled up.
Yeah.
They had to do this to – this is training wheels, basically. This is a training wheel system. You're going to have both, and you're going to eventually get used to one, and then they're going to get rid of desktop probably at some point in the future.
If they get rid of desktop, that they're done.
I don't think so. You know why? Desktop's already dead.
Desktop's
already dead. And what I mean by that, and Paul Thurrott says this too, what you use as desktop today really isn't desktop. But what are people actually running on desktop? Their browser, an antivirus program. Some people run Photoshop. And, you know, an office, you know. But other than that, most of it is web apps and applets and these kind of things. And that's what you're already getting in Windows 8. I don't know what people are actually using desktop for outside of just being familiar with it. That's really about it. So I think desktop's already moved on. And we've already seen people are getting tablets and smartphones way more than they are getting desktop computers. We've already moved away from it. It's just a, I think it's more of a familiarity legacy and you just want people just like to desktop.
Well, I think it's also a certain amount of app compatibility with legacy apps that people are on a day-to-day basis they're dependent on, and that's what they're used to using. And a lot of those apps don't exist in the Windows Store ecosystem yet. And I think that is part of the hurdle, and that's why it's so important that the whole apps side of the ecosystem for the company is so important. Because let's put it out there as honest, there's not much software development going to the desktop anymore.
Paul Thurrott said this recently. He said that there hasn't been a new x86 app, except maybe Chrome, which is a browser, in the last 10 years. When was the last time you've heard of an x86 app that was like truly amazing, must have?
So you guys don't consider like Premiere and those types of things true desktop applications?
No, I do. And that's the exception. You can say like the Adobe suites, right? The Premiere and photo editing. Right. And I shouldn't say they're going to get rid of desktop. I think what you're going to see is desktop will go away on tablets and the lower end stuff. I think that's just going to be completely phased out. I have an 8-inch.
Well, I think it will always be an option. It's almost going to be the desktop would be like an app, you know, like a virtual environment. I mean, I think is what's going to wind up happening.
Yeah, like command line interface is still technically there. You can still do those if you want to. You know, I mean, that's probably a better way of putting it than
you
just
know, I think most corporate America, though, uses a lot of heavy lifting apps. You know, the people that I work with and associate with, they use very high end, you know, requiring a significant amount of hardware, not inexpensive, you know, but. You know, maybe for my wife, the desktop could go away. But from a business standpoint, I just don't think that, you know, engineering firms, people that do graphic design, all those folks, you know, they might be already on the Mac platform, but there's still a fair amount of people that are using Adobe Suites on Windows.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't know. I think with anything, time will tell. But I feel like they're making the... You know, everyone's trying to. What we're doing is we're catering to the idiots.
I don't know about that. I think it's just a real change in the way computing has gone in the last few years. I think the iPad really changed, you know, how people use devices or see devices. And the fact is, people aren't buying PCs as much anymore. Although the benefit here is, if you do buy Windows 8, it'll work perfectly on a computer from 3-4 years ago or longer. It's really efficient on, you know, older hardware. But you're just seeing a change in computing. Everybody's got smartphones now. We're talking about 6-inch smartphones. Remember how smartphones went from like huge and they got tiny, tiny, tiny? Then you had that Motorola Razr and everything was so thin and light. And now we're like going back in the reverse direction. Who would have predicted that? No one. The idea of using a 6-inch phone, I think, is hilarious, because I don't think when the Note came out, everybody laughed at it. Everybody's like, that's the dumbest thing ever. It'll never sell. And everybody was wrong. And it sold huge. And now everybody's trying to make big screen devices. So where this stuff is going, I think, is a challenge. But it is changing. And the way computing is being done. Look at cloud computing. You know, this is becoming big now.
Yeah.
You why do it on your PC when you can have it out there and done remotely? It's an interesting problem. It's an interesting time. But I don't think all the stuff has been written in stone yet. And so... yeah, we'll see what happens.
When the when you guys on your podcast side of the business, are you guys still seeing most of your distribution through iTunes, and where are you guys seeing most of your take up?
That's a good question. I haven't actually checked our numbers in a while, but yeah, iTunes is still pretty big. Of course, with our platform, you know, because Windows Phone, a lot of people are still using the Zune system, the Xbox podcast. A lot of them come through there. A lot of it's just direct traffic too, so it kind of varies. But everybody has their own podcatcher app that they like to use as well. So, but I haven't actually checked the numbers in a while. So, yeah, as Rob probably knows, our podcast is becoming less and less frequent. So, mostly because of I do the podcast that's over in the UK, and it always becomes a challenge for time zones, and you know, he was moving recently, so we haven't been as consistent. That of course hurts our traffic as far as doing it, but we do it more not for traffic purposes, but more or less to keep in touch with the audience and deliver you know, our audience just loves to do podcasts. That's what it comes down to. But yeah,
very, very cool. Rob?
Yeah. Trying to think here, what direction can we take this?
I know I was going to ask. What are the So if you do have a Windows phone and you're just a listener, what's the app? What's is there any apps besides what Rob manages with the marketplace? Or
well, so you do have Xbox Music built into the phones, and you know, previously it was a Zune on Windows Phone 7 devices, and that does have podcasts direct, and you can just download them directly to your phone. That's one solution. The problem with that is it's sort of region restricted, so it depends where you are in the world whether you have access to that. I'll let Rob handle that part. He knows this issue.
It's only in the U.S., so
Yeah, so it's a very frustrating thing. There's a couple apps out there. One's called Podcasts. I think another one's called Podcast Lounge, which is really good. So there are a few out that handle it.
You know, yeah, let me comment on both of those. Both of those apps use the Zune podcast APIs, so they're basically Zune catalog apps.
That's funny.
Both the Podcast Lounge and the podcast app are basically the same programming that I work on.
That's scary from an app developer and being locked into. Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, go ahead, Daniel. You were.
Yeah. So I haven't been following it too much as far as like, you know, options out there, but everybody has their own preference for getting podcasts. At least on Windows Phone, it does this cool thing where it'll automatically download it when it's on Wi-Fi and at nighttime and, you know, when a device is not being used. And so it's pretty smart about that. But as far as how to get access to them, yeah, you know, part of it's still region restricted. That's supposedly changing soon. But Rob, you may know some of the better solutions out there that people use on Windows Phone.
I think you've named most of them right there.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, because the podcasts app is also available on Windows 8, so it's a full, you know, it's available for RT and that too, and that has all my podcast programming and my catalog in it too. But it is a third party app that was developed by a Windows Phone developer, it's a quasi official. You know, it's a third-party app, but it was built in. You know, it was built internally. So anyway, it's not an official app, though.
I suppose people could use iTunes, but I can tell you right now, there is no one uses iTunes on Windows Phone. Not because of like, I still don't like iTunes. It's just it's a painful program to install on a PC, and so I don't know many people that would use it to manage podcasts.
People, they just manage on their phones now. They don't use the actual, you don't have to use the iTunes app anymore. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, I really didn't have any more questions for him, Rob, unless you do.
Well, let's dive into another area here. You know, I'm sure that, you know, Daniel, what's your thoughts on kind of the overall direction and what's happening with podcasting in general, just from a market perspective? I don't know if you pay attention to that stuff very closely, but you know, you've been around the space a long time too, and so are you seeing the consumption of your show growing, or what's kind of your usage of podcasting too, and you know, from a consumer too, and what are you seeing in the market?
Yeah. So I'll take that last part there with my usage. Like I really like podcasts, but I don't have that normal life that normal people do that allows me to, I don't commute to work, right? I go into my living room, versus my bedroom. And so I don't get that time to sort of relax or listen to podcasts as much as I'd like to. Having said that, I like the idea of tuning into shows sort of live. I think it's an interesting concept of, like, podcasts used to be sort of recorded in secret, you know, late at night in someone's room, and then it was just recorded, and then it was just released out there, and it just kind of came out. Almost like a magazine subscription. You didn't see it being made. You just checked your mailbox one day, and there is a new issue.
Yeah.
And that's how podcasts were. Podcasts now, I see them changing as to more live shows. And that's how we're kind of approaching it. It's a live show. And then, oh, here's the recorded version. It's like a TiVo almost. And here's the recorded version, which you can listen to on your spare time. But we like sort of, and this is what we really like to do on Windows Phone Central. It's the idea of making it like the Windows Phone Central show, where you tune into it. It's an hour or a half hour. And we do it live. We do the live chat room too, so our audience can participate. And we do that specifically so at the end we can take questions and, you know, answer them directly. And that's how I like to approach this. It's more of like a live TV show that you tune into, ideally every day, you know, like, or once a week on a Wednesday, say 4 p.m., and you'll get that show. Everybody can tune in, watch it video, not just audio, but watch the video of it being recorded live, listen to the audio on your phone, which we can't actually do right now because of Google. And everybody can kind of tune in at once. And then if you missed it, oh, look, there's the podcast there. You can now download it to your phone or watch it later. For me, that's sort of where all this stuff is going. I really like that approach. I do that when I listen to, you know, the Paul Thurrott show there. You know, I like to tune in. It's sort of like an event. You're tuning in and you're going to watch it for a while. And so that's where I see how podcast is going. I kind of like that approach a little bit better.
Yeah, it's funny how you say that it's the Paul Thurrott show. I think it's I mean, it really is. I mean, I think
Windows Weekly
and What the Tech are, it is basically the Paul Thurrott show. I think he should just just do his own podcast. Just say it's the Paul Thurrott show, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah, all that stuff with branding.
I mean, he's a very popular guy online around Windows. That's for sure.
Well, you know,
yeah, Paul, like, personal experience, he reminds me of where I would be if I was, like, even slightly more grumpy. Because he's, like, so funny, like, just how, like, kind of grouchy he is, but it's all done sort of
dry interest. Humor. He's just dry. Yeah. That's all you can say. Deadpan dry humor.
I have a lot of fun when I hang out with him, so.
But that's just
Paul's
his nature, though.
Paul's been on
though.
This show before.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what's good about him. He's never, you can't accuse him of being fanboyish because his enthusiasm is always sort of. Yeah. so I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, that model, I think, is sort of, I like that concept. I think that's where things are sort of going. You see Verge do this, and Gadget had their show for a while too. And this idea of, as video production has kind of come down in cost, and a lot of people who went to school for videography and video editing can't find jobs, you get a lot more in that market of a lot of people with a lot more available talent who can do this, where, you know, 5-10 years ago, that wasn't readily available. And so, you know, you look at how people could shoot stuff on a 5D, you know, Canon camera and get really high quality video that looks like it was professionally shot. And basically, it is professionally shot. I think you always start to see the production levels go up. And this idea of like a show, I think, is kind of a little bit more fits in with what people, because podcasts are interesting. Tech savvy people use podcasts. I don't find a lot of regular people who are just like they're into technology but not really into it, don't do podcasts. And to them, it's sort of like when you bring up RSS feeds, right? You know, remember when, you know, Google was getting with RSS a couple of weeks or months ago. You know, RSS is still a nerd thing. I hate to say it, but like a lot of people don't do RSS feeds. That's where you see things like Flipboard, right, come out, which is basically a nice RSS reader, but it's taking that techie stuff out of the way. So the idea of like sort of pushing down the idea of podcast as the term and rebranding it as sort of a show of some sort, a new media show, I think sort of fits better into existing paradigms that regular people are familiar with. And so they may end up watching a podcast but not really realizing that's what it technically is.
I think most people have already shifted to that point. I think that's already accomplished. Yeah. But, you know, it's all about, you know, today it's really about the distribution. It's about where the content is available.
Sure.
And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, they it doesn't matter how they get it, as long as they get it. And, and the good thing is people don't have to know that an RSS feed is feeding an app or feeding a Roku or feeding whatever may be happening to wherever that content is getting. That's up to the folks that are producing to make that all kind of transparent.
Yeah, Todd, I agree. I think that the whole kind of plan around RSS feeds is that eventually it would disappear into the back end, right?
Well, and yeah, it is in the
all,
back end.
All users would see is just access to the content.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think we're there.
Yeah, it should be the pipe and not the main feature itself, which is how RSS was presented for a long time. It's like the pipe was the feature, and it shouldn't be. Yep. It should be just hidden back there. You don't know about it. And that's why I think apps like Flipboard, which, I mean, they're nice, or Weave, they're basically just RSS feeds, you know? But there you go.
Yeah.
And I think, though, that, you know, people know now, you know, when they come to a site and they see something, they want to subscribe, they can click on it. And unfortunately, where the disconnect is and where people have the most challenge is, you know, they come to a website and they're like, okay, this is a great show. How do I get this now on my mobile device? So that's the transition part that people are having challenges with, because, you know, they click on a subscribe button, and what's a subscribe button? Well, it's iTunes. And it brings up the iTunes link. It brings up the iTunes podcast app in the on their mobile device, and they can click subscribe, and they're good. But if they're on their desktop, it takes them to the iTunes app, which sucks. We don't want them doing that. So, you know, there's, you know,
Todd, you're out after my heart.
Well, you know, but in all honesty, you know, there's still a huge amount of consumption being on the desktop. So the challenge is how do we get them from the desktop to the mobile? And there's no straight linear path to do that anymore. It's not like I can click on something and say, send an SMS message to my phone and let me subscribe. That's what really probably needs to happen.
Yeah. Well, and I think more and more our computing devices are the same thing as our desktops used to be, right? So, it just needs to work on our tablets, right?
Well, it can.
So tablets or phones or whatever, and less thinking about desktops, I think.
But Rob, there's still a huge percentage of people that are coming via a desktop browser.
Sure.
Not a mobile browser, a desktop browser.
Sure, you bet. And I think that, you know, I think if you look at what's happening with Microsoft is that they are kind of moving past the desktop. There's no question. And I wonder about that too. I think that it's leaving behind millions of people.
But they want to be, you know, what we really want them to do is take the content with them, you know, and there's no clear path to get there. There's too many steps to still do that.
Yeah, it's because it comes out of that old problem, right? Proprietary. You know, every company has their own version of how to do it, and then they want their own distribution system. They want everybody to tie in. You know, Apple does this all the time with iTunes, right? You know, iTunes Radio. Okay, it sounds really good. It's not catching on, though, from the latest stats I heard. Pandora just did really well in the stock market. So, you know, you've seen companies always try to do proprietary things, try to get everybody out there where people really want sort of open source, but open source itself is always problematic because, you know, who controls it, branding, all this kind of thing. So it is a tough nut to crack. You know, you look at something like YouTube, before we, you know, raise a question about video, you know, YouTube is not the ideal solution. There's a lot of good stuff about YouTube, but there's a lot of bad too, like the comments, right? Which it's trying to fix now. And it's ironic, you're trying to fix it and people are still going crazy over that. YouTube is not ideal, but what's going to challenge it, right? Could YouTube ever be displaced? Microsoft years ago did have their video service. I think it was called Soap or something. I forgot the name of it. But they were trying.
Soapbox. It was called Soapbox. Yeah.
And it just completely failed. And, you know, you have Vimeo and some other video services, but none of them really threatened YouTube's, you know, core thing. And it's tough to get that. Everybody wants a universal standard, and yet nobody wants a universal standard. We want the conveniences of it, but then, you know, we want that benevolent person in control, you know.
What's interesting about the change that YouTube made on comments is everyone started screaming about it, but then all of a sudden you've noticed it's died down. And the reason it has is because people's numbers are up.
Yeah, yeah.
So no, it's kind of, yeah. I mean. So as soon as YouTube they saw comments, their numbers increase, you know, said, oh, maybe that wasn't such a bad thing that it's tied to my Google Plus account now.
Sure, definitely.
So, Todd, so when you say your numbers are up, is it video views are up or are the comments are up?
Yeah, video views are up. It's kind of a weird, someone needs to explain to me why, but I guess it's that, you know, a lot of people are hanging out on Google Plus and they're not necessarily hanging out on YouTube. And, you know, the comments come into Google Plus and, you know, it's mirrored. So it's and plus you're getting rid of the trolls too. So, you know, there's a real face behind, there's a real face.
I think whatever opportunity there possibly was to displace YouTube is may have been lost now if they really fix this commenting system, because that's sort of the last, you know, real critique you can give, you know, Google and YouTube.
An opportunity for is long format content, because YouTube is short format king. So where would people want to go for long format? Is that, you know, that is a frontier that is, you know, you can do long format on YouTube, but people don't watch too much long format on YouTube.
Well, right. Todd, I think that the long form area, unfortunately, I think is dominated by Netflix right now.
Well,
right?
That's true. And Amazon. Yeah, Amazon's getting into that stuff now, too.
And but, you know, I guess
and Hulu.
Maybe the opportunity lays in the set-top boxes and stuff, because, you know, we're starting to see more traction on those. So who knows? You know, utilization is definitely up. Where it had flatlined for a while, but the set-top boxes, OTT is definitely back, but it's largely for the video, folks. No one, doesn't do too good on audio.
Oh, I use my Xbox for primarily entertainment. So for me, the idea of getting podcasts on my Xbox would be fantastic, because I got rid of cable years ago. I use Xbox for Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, and what other video apps are out there. And so for me, that's my main source of my literal entertainment hub. So Xbox One for me is very awesome. That's exactly sort of what I wanted. But yeah, there's still this question of how to get some of that content from my desktop or even my phone directly onto that Xbox One to make it seamless. So I just feel like it's another, you know, tile on there that I can quickly access and, you know, stream directly. That's really the goal. I'd love to have like the WP Central show sort of like in that, you know, somehow so people can watch on their Xbox. I think that'd be fantastic. But how do I get to that? No idea.
Well,
I get to go to YouTube app maybe, I guess, but that's not ideal.
Well, it's you know, just gonna have to develop an Xbox One app.
Or Microsoft, make a show and
have Microsoft make it for you. Hook a brother up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, so what you guys are looking for on Xbox is a platform that can enable kind of live shows and on demand shows, kind of like what YouTube is, right? Is that what you're really hoping for?
And they kind of did that with they had some Kinect apps that were kind of doing that, but they never really pursued it.
You know, if I could, even if on Xbox One, I could do like I can do with Chromecast by just sending it to the TV. You know, that's you know, pretty good functionality. Sure. That is so slick. My kids, I mean, they are, you know, so they both have a Nexus 7 tablet. So whether they're sitting there and they're like, oh, watch this. And the one will flip to the TV and they'll watch a video. And then the next one will say, oh, I got one. And they'll flip and it's back and forth. They have a great time with it, you know, and most of it's on demand stuff. It's not live.
And they kind of have that with the smart glass app and
That's
the Xbox
a little bit,
Never heard of
video
it.
App actually works a little bit.
You
like
heard
that.
Smart Glass is pretty awesome. It's on iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. It's not platform specific, which is, once again, you gotta give Microsoft some credit. They could keep a lot of this stuff to themselves and just be like position Windows Phone for it, which is sort of what Android is now doing. Android used to be like, Google used to make apps for everything, no matter how remote the platform was, and then they started realizing, well, Android's catching on. Let's pull our troops in. And now they're trying to keep more and more content to themselves. iOS is still tough for them because they realize that's still a lot of money that they can't just turn away. But they're trying to push out the smaller players. You know, Smart Glass is a work in progress. I think on Xbox One, you're going to really, and as Windows Phone and everything continues, you'll really start to see it improve. But it's an impressive system, or at least potentially it's there. You also have Miracast support built into Windows 8, you know, I'm not sure about that, but you know, that's sort of the idea too, to stream directly.
They've been trying to get some foot ground on that for a couple of years and haven't been real successful.
Yeah, exactly.
Rob, who do we have coming up next week? Have we got somebody lined up yet?
I don't have a name for you yet.
Okay.
So So you'll have to announce it during the week next week.
All right. I've been working on trying to get Andrew Cross from NewTek, but I haven't been able to really kind of close the loop on him yet. So,
well, if you can, we can slot him in next week.
Yeah, I'm trying, but he's a busy guy.
So, okay.
Yeah, maybe there's some other players out there. Maybe I'll reach out to the Wirecast folks or somebody like that. Maybe we can get someone from them on.
Sure, sure. That'd be great.
I guess, I was looking at your guys' Mobile Nations website. Is this kind of just like a placeholder for people to come then launch off to?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the Mobile Nations branding and concept is an evolving project for us, and we're trying to position it in a certain way, but we're kind of feeling that out. You know, over the summer we had the Talk Mobile, mini web series that we ran. It was actually for 10 weeks. It was a pretty massive project where we discussed all topics on mobile, but sort of stepping away from the platform specific stuff. So how Mobile Nations progresses, you'll see it's coming closer and closer together, but we're trying to keep our brand identity separate too with the sites and make sure those communities are still driven by community members.
So what does Callie do with you guys? What show does she do a show or?
Oh, so she helped us with Talk Mobile. Her and John, they hosted the Talk Mobile series.
Oh, I gotcha.
So they acted as moderators the sane people and trying to keep us all in line. And they were fantastic to work with. So, but we may be doing something with them too at CES. So
let's see, we've got the WP Central as part of your group. And then that's you. And then imore.com, the Crackberry folks, crackberry.com. Mm-hmm. And then AndroidCentral.com is essentially everyone is then separate entities or they're working these sites and you guys just work as a collaborative. Is that how that works? Okay.
Yeah. Almost every morning, all the editors for all the sites, we all talk to each other, catch each other up on what's big, what's happening on our platforms. We also discuss strategy. Hey, I did this yesterday. This worked for me. You guys should try to. The audience is really low. And we try to, and sometimes we try to do cross platform, across site news or, you know, events and that kind of thing. So it works out well because just because you use a Windows phone doesn't mean you don't care about, you know, Apple news or Android news. And so we want to make sure that people are sort of, you know, seeing that and coming into their news feeds once in a while.
Well, when you're at CES, definitely stop by our broadcast studio. We're just outside of North Hall. And,
definitely. Yeah. CES is good for Windows Phone people because we don't have that much news. So I can actually spend some time meeting up with people. That's cool. I'll definitely swing by.
And the mobile side of CES is exploding. This year, I think what you'll see at CES is the healthcare section has doubled again. So that's going to be really, really. And we're actually taking two sets of teams are actually going to be focusing completely on the healthcare stuff because it's basically taking up. Like half of North Hall. I mean, it's really, it's gotten big. All right. Very cool. Rob, any closing thoughts?
Well, I wanted to ask him about, is he involved in kind of podcast sponsorship and advertisers? Are you, what's kind of the overriding revenue model? Is it an advertising model? Or are you getting sponsorship on your podcast or what's happening, in that area for you and what's been your experience, I guess?
Yeah. We haven't monetized really our podcast outside of, you know, what's on YouTube and, you know, regular distribution. It's not something we've seen yet as a way to completely monetized. We probably could, and to be honest, this is probably more or less. We just have a lot of stuff we're trying to do. That's one area. Renee Ritchie from iMore and Mobile Nations is probably the guy to talk to on this. He has a better idea because he actually handles a lot of our the meta stuff on the backgrounding of podcasting. There's definitely potential there to make money if you do it right. It's sort of like college. When you're applying, all that free money was there. You just had to ask for it, sit there and write all those letters. I think it's the same thing with podcasting. The potential there for making revenue is certainly there, but it requires a lot of effort, some homework. If you do it right with the ads and stuff, you can actually, especially sponsorship. We don't get sponsored. I don't know if that's something we'll necessarily pursue, maybe something in the future. It's an interesting question, like Microsoft or Nokia would ever do that. We've never asked and, we don't get any sponsorship from anyone right now. But that's certainly a path we can go down. I know, the Windows Phone Developer Podcast, I think it was working with Microsoft for a while. So there's opportunities there. You just got to ask for them.
Yeah, I'm sure that Todd can probably help you out a little bit.
Yeah, I'd love to, love to talk to you if you guys get to the point where you want to do that. And if you need help with some metrics too, we've got a fantastic metric system. So we can talk about that another time. But
definitely.
Rob, we're already here at the 90-minute mark. So
wow. Time flies when you're having fun.
Time to bust out. So everyone, thanks for tuning in this week. And of course, you can reach me, Todd at newmediashow.com or Rob at newmediashow.com. And just want to remind everyone, we got our crowdfunding effort going on for some of our incidental costs for CES. I just yesterday sent in the security. Our security's a little less this year, only $2,000 for the booth security. So it was
only $2,000.
It was $2,400 last year. So anywhere I can save a little bit of money, it helps. But you haul in $45,000 to $55,000 worth of gear. You don't want to leave it sitting there for someone to walk off. So
probably not.
definitely worth the expense for the security. But hey, thanks for being here, and we'll see you next Saturday. And I think that'll be our last show until after the Thanksgiving holiday. So we'll be here on the 23rd, and then we'll be back with you on December 7th. So we'll see y'all next week. Rob and Daniel, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
And make sure you guys follow Daniel on Twitter at Daniel_Rubino. And or just looking, if you look for WP Central, you'll find him on Twitter. So
that's true.
But to everyone else, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Everyone take care. And
take care.
Aloha.
See you later.